The Spectator magazine is the greatest magazine in the English language. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online to see for yourselves. Also, against my advice as editor, we're giving away a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Given that you're spending 12 quid, you can do the maths. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher. But don't hurry, because this offer probably loses us money.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Scots. My name is Lucy Dunn and I'm joined by The Spectator's political editor Katie Balls and Spectator writer and Times columnist Ian McWhirter. It's been a turbulent few weeks in Scottish politics and it's all come to a head today with Humza Yousaf announcing his resignation. Ian, can you take us through what's happened over the past few weeks and how we've actually got to this point?
Well, tensions had been growing within the coalition between the Greens and the SNP for some time, mainly over a succession of policy failures, some of which the Greens were implicated in, the deposit return scheme, there's a gender recognition reform bill, the Hate Crime Act. And there was a feeling growing, I think, that this relationship between the Greens and the SNP could well have been coming to the end of its natural life, because a lot of people in the SNP had been complaining that the Greens were the tail wagging the dog. I think it came to a head, though, perhaps surprisingly, not over independence and not over even the abandonment of the recent climate targets, but over this vexed issue of transgenderism and specifically the CAS report. It seems to have been the co-leader of the Greens, Patrick Harvey's, refusal to accept the validity of the CAS report and to continue calling for opposing the idea of a pause on puberty blockers. That seems to have been the issue that really led to the final breakup. It is very strange, because it wasn't really independence was supposed to be what the two parties were in the common project of trying to achieve. And yet it's something which is very peripheral to most people's lives. However, I think it underlines again the extent to which the Green Party and the SNP are very different creatures. The Greens are an ideological party, described as a zealot party by many, who are very concerned about some of these identity politics issues. The SNP has always been a much broader political phenomenon, naturally, because it's an independence party. It wants to bring people together, and it has quite a conservative wing who voted for Kate Forbes in the leadership election just a year ago in very large numbers. So, and that's what happened. The tensions got too great. Humza Yousaf decided he had to pull the plugs on it. Unfortunately, he did it in a rather unceremonious way. He just called them in early in the morning, told them they were to pack their bags and leave the Butte House agreement. And now he says he's surprised that they were upset about it. Well, I can't imagine that they could not have realized that this would be taken, you know, very seriously by the Greens. And I don't really know how he gamed through, how he thought this was going to end up. I can only assume he thought that the party, the SNP, would accept an arrangement with the Alba Party and their MSP, Ash Regan. I can only assume he thought that was a done deal. Alex Salmond has confirmed that, actually. He said that the very morning of his resignation, that Humza Yousaf phoned him up and asked him, said to him, we think your terms for the arrangement are fine, are very reasonable. But some grouping in the SNP, presumably led by the former First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, who has tremendous animosity towards Alex Salmond, assumed they just refused to accept that this could go through, and therefore I think the whole deal collapsed rather in a heap.
And Katie, you've been watching the resignation speech given by Humza Yousaf this morning. What did you make of it? What did you make of his emotional plea to his family and his discussion about he didn't quite understand what the Greens were going to act like, how they were going to react after he had sort of cut down the Butte House agreement?
Yeah, I think to Ian's point, you can see from that effectively Humza Yousaf is admitting that he made a catastrophic miscalculation in terms of tearing up the power sharing agreement with the Scottish Greens. He did so last week after initially suggesting he planned to stick with the Greens. So we talk about the CAS review, but of course there was also the climate target, the fact they were under pressure there. You had the Greens going to their membership. At the time, Hemsley Yousaf was saying to Summoner's Party, no, let's stick with the Scottish Greens. He had this change of heart for some of the reasons Ian outlined, but I think in that press conference that we just heard, saying that he had underappreciated the level of hurt he would cause to the Scottish Greens by pulling out in the way that he had done. There's just been the sense of events spiralling out of his control, and everyone's kept saying, well, He must have thought all this through. He must have thought all these steps through. Quite clearly what happened is he did not quite realise how the Scottish Greens could respond. He also said he spent the weekend, as we know, speaking to, you know, figures in the Green Party, figures in ALBA, Alex Salmond's fellow Independence Party. And he said that he could have won those two votes that we're expecting this week. One, a no confidence vote as leadership. One, a binding no confidence vote as government, which would have meant the government fell. But he was not willing to do the deals he needed to do. Now, that appears to be a reference at Ash Reagan, ALBA, and Alex Salmond, who'd been pretty out there this weekend. Much more Alex Salmond, notably, than Ash Reagan, giving these interviews saying, oh, we'll work with him, we'll give him this one vote, we'll keep the SNP propped up, but only if we get certain demands. And we didn't know the specifics, but they wanted various things. And that caused some unrest within the SNP. You could tell from that speech where Hemsley Yousaf was quite emotional, you know, talking about his legacy, talking about the fact he was proud to be the first politician of Asian and Muslim heritage to win the role, talking about how he was happy to have some of the highest taxes in the UK, saying this is the most progressive, that, you know, he wanted to point to some things. But I think what I took away from it is the way he was talking is that he thinks the path to the SNP effectively staying in power is going to be through a deal with the Greens. And it seems as though he felt that he was no longer in a position to do that. I think the statement the Scottish Greens have put out since that press conference, effectively saying, you know, they're always willing to work with opposition in a constructive way, saying that the SNP has the right to try and form a minority government, suggests that there could be a path there. And now it depends somewhat on getting a candidate who is going to work for the Scottish Greens. Hemsley Yousaf clearly not in the camp to want to team up with ALBA.
So, Katie, as you mentioned, we're now looking towards who might be the next contender, the next leader of the SNP. What are the different factors at play here when it comes to looking at the next candidate?
Yes, so I think there's a lot still in flux because obviously we've just had Hemsley Yousaf's announcement, and the bookies' odds are very much leaning towards John Swinney, who decided not to run after Nicola Sturgeon left. I think suggested he never wanted to be First Minister, but lots of people said they never wanted to be Prime Minister, and then look at them now. And therefore, you know, I think there is space for that. I think he is seen as a very safe pair of hands, and perhaps someone who would not have the title caretaker First Minister, but could guide the party to a point whereby, navigating it so they avoid having another no confidence, they avoid having this early Scottish Parliament election, but then potentially later down the line, around the time of the Scottish Parliament elections, the party's in a place to pick a leader more for the long term. I think then you also have, of course, Kate Forbes, who was Hemsley Yousaf's rival the last time around. Could she be tempted to run again? I think the tricky thing for Kate Forbes is right now, the party does not want an early Scottish Parliament election. And you look at all the previous comments of the Scottish Greens, they do not want to work with Kate Forbes. And I think in this leadership contest, I mean, it was a factor last time around in the sense there were questions about what happens with the Greens. But I think probably more acutely, you're going to have a situation where people say, well, sure, if you're going for it, are you just going to throw the party into an immediate Scottish Parliament election? Or is your plan to do a deal with ALBA, for example, which is clearly divisive to some parts of it? I think there's also an interesting one. You know, if you look at the bookies' odds, and there's a mix here, always gives you a good indicator. But, there is also Stephen Flynn, who's the Westminster MP, and he is the Westminster leader. Now, he is 40-1. According to William Hill, so not seen as sure thing, but lots of people are talking about as a potential future leader. And could you have a system where actually you just trade out one MSP, you get him into position, then he's able to do so? But you know, the bookies are also talking about Neil Gray, and you know, I think there's something even saying, you know, 25-1 Ash Reagan, which seems quite unlikely given she's not in the party. I think the question is there an effort within the SNP to say, given all the problems they currently are having, let's rally around find one candidate and get us to a more secure place? Or do some candidates think, actually, no, I'm not going to go along with that, which is when these things tend to break down a bit?
And ultimately, we're left with a situation where it seems as though the Greens still have a lot of influence over the party, as you were saying. What is the outlook for the SNP over the next couple of years when leading up to the 2026 Holyrood election? Are the Scottish Greens going to continue to have a big say, essentially, in the future of the Nationalist Party?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting one because you look at that Scottish Green statement and they say they're used to working effectively from opposition. So that suggests that they're not trying to revive the Bute House agreement, but they're also implying they are willing to get behind SNP First Minister as long as it's the right candidate. And I think probably after the tumultuous events of last week, where I think clearly Hamza Yousaf's decision to abruptly end the agreement took them by surprise, there was, in the words of Yousaf, a lot of anger, a lot of hurt. I feel everyone has calmed down a bit, and probably, you know, the Greens are thinking too, would we really want to go into an election right now? How would our membership see that? How would our voters see that if the result is to have, for example, a unionist first minister eventually, perhaps Anna Sawa? So I think we're probably at the point where they will be able to exert some influence, and you could argue this has emboldened them, because it would imply, if they cannot find any other partner, how heavily reliant the SNP are on them, even without that. But I think perhaps some independence for both sides would actually be quite healthy, because just as the Greens did not want to be associated with the climate targets, there's also questions on the CAS review, having a bit of space to oppose the SNP while also, you know, keeping them where they are might be what's most comfortable for both parties at this point.
And Ian, what do you think is going to be Hamza Yousaf's legacy? Now that he's stepped down, he's become the second shortest serving First Minister of Scotland after Henry McLeish. What has he done in his time?
Well, Hamza Yousaf's legacy will be, it's going to be more of the same, really. It's going to be very chaotic. He had a very undistinguished period as First Minister. So he's a very nice man, I hasten to add. You know, everybody testifies to that. He's a lovely guy. But unfortunately, everything he touches tends to fall apart one way or another. Now, he's left the party in a very difficult situation, because while he's announced his intention to resign, he hasn't actually resigned yet. So he's going to be around for a bit longer and until the SNP can, you know, elect another leader. And that's going to be extremely difficult, because the Greens have said that they will not accept the front runner in that contest, Kate Forbes, who ran, the former finance secretary, who ran Hamza Yousaf very close last year in the leadership election last April. They say they won't accept Kate Forbes because she's a social conservative, she doesn't like trans politics, she wouldn't revive the gender recognition reform bill, etc. And I think that's going to be very awkward. The only other potential candidate, the Sturgeonite candidate, if you like, the pro-Green candidate, would be Jenny Gill-Ruth, the education secretary, who interestingly happens to be married to the former leader of the Scottish Labour Party, Kezia Dugdale. But I think that's partly because of that connection. I think that's going to be very difficult for a lot of the SNP membership to accept that the Greens are now dictating who is going to be leading the Scottish National Party, who's going to be the fate of the government, and also deciding who is going to be the First Minister of Scotland. This is a party which has maybe 8% of the popular vote in Scotland. It's a very marginal force. It really only rose to prominence because it allied itself loosely to this cause of independence and rode in the back of the SNP. And I think for many in the party, they will find it intolerable that the leading candidate, who many regard as the most able candidate, cannot be considered for the leadership because of the Greens' disenchantment with it. So that gets us back to the situation we're in before, that, you know, if the SNP elects somebody who the Greens don't like, it would be back to deciding whether or not they would be able to do a deal with Alex Salmond to get them through another no-confidence more vote. So the Hamza legacy is just, I'm afraid, going to be more of the same.
Thank you, Ian. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening.